About half a year ago, I made a video about the creativity movement. It was an overview of the cult's existence and their leadership of Ben Clausen and Matt Hale. However, after being contacted by Reverend Hardy Lloyd, I was made aware of another sect that split off from Matt Hale and was still active to this day, that being his Church of Ben Clausen. After some back and forth about the video I made, I looked into the website for his group, as well as into his own history, and decided that I want to interview him. He agreed to be interviewed, and what follows will be that. The focus of this interview was primarily on what differentiated his group from the rest of the creativity movement, as well as focus on some beliefs that I found unusual. These include the group's position on abortion, their position on Hispanics, and a section of their website called Ancient White History. I also wanted to learn a little about his experiences living as a creator, so some of the questions pertain to that. One of the things that I didn't ask about, but feel important to everyone listening to know, is Lloyd's relationship with the police. In 2004, Lloyd killed a woman named Lori Hahn. This caused him to go to court, but he successfully claimed it was self-defense. He also now claims that she was a federal agent and encourages others in his group to follow his example if given the chance. There is no evidence to suggest this claim is true. Despite not being convicted of murder, Lloyd was sent to jail for carrying a firearm without a license. Since then, he has been in and out of jail, sometimes for possessing guns as a felon, and other times for violating the terms of his supervised release. Currently, he is out of prison, but appears to currently be wanted by the Texas police. The main reason I didn't ask about these was twofold. One, this is the primary thing that all the articles about him focus on, and as such, I want to learn something new. And two, I want to largely avoid being confrontational and largely just hear what he has to say. While I don't agree with his beliefs in the slightest and find his actions abhorrent, his is a perspective that sadly is held by a decent amount of people, and I think that hearing it uninterrupted is far more informative than a confrontation after every sentence. Perhaps if I had planned this as more of a debate of his views, then I would have been more confrontational, but this was planned as an interview, so my goal was to interview. Lastly, before I present the interview largely unedited, I want to request the watchers do not harass this man. If anything, that will just reinforce his view that he is being oppressed because of his views, and it doesn't really help anyone. If you do choose to reach out to him, he seems to be more than willing to discuss his views, though you can find most of them on his website. With that said, thank you for watching, and here's the interview. Reverend Hardy Lloyd, just tell us about who you are and what you do.
Well, I'm Reverend Hardy Lloyd, the Pontifex Maximus of the Church of Ben Clausen. Our website is creativityreligion.com and churchofbenclausen.org. There's a detailed history of my own activism as far as creativity is concerned, plus a detailed history of Ben Clausen's history. On there's some stuff on Matt Hale. But most people know about Matt Hale, so I kind of left a lot of the little things out. And the church, I want to throw this out there right off the bat. The Church of Ben Clausen is run as an actual church. The CA, which I was briefly an associate member of, and the TCM, which technically I was a member of during the when it switched from WCOTC to TCM, which is the Creativity Movement. The Creativity Movement and the Creativity Alliance are run as basically just membership groups or gangs. They're not actually run as churches. The Church of Ben Clausen is run strictly as a church. I was raised Mormon, and I brought a lot of that structure, that organization into create into the Church of Ben Clausen. So it is run as an actual church. Each congregation and primary group is semi-independent of me. That's in case anything happens to me, of course, nothing happens to them. But the Church of Ben Clausen is the only worldwide creativity church that actually is run as a church. We do have a sister church in the Northwest, but they're strictly associated with individuals in the Northwest of the United States. And we do have a sister church in Russia, but that focuses solely on Russia.
Okay,
But
so
we do have members worldwide.
yeah, so would you say that's like the fundamental, your beliefs are generally the same as like the Creativity Alliance and such, but your
Well,
structure is the main difference.
Well, not just the structure, but the way we follow it. I follow creativity as a religion because it is.
Yeah.
And the, well, Campbell, who runs the CA, which I don't have very much nice to say about him.
Yeah.
Campbell, who runs the CA, barring my own suspicions of him being a possible agent for the Australian police, he treats it as a membership gang. And he's actually even stated that. He says that he's modeled it on the biker gangs of Australia and the United States. It's not run as a church. And as far as I know, very few people that are affiliated with the CA actually follow creativity as a religion. The TCM is a little bit better than the CA, you know. But once again, they have a very political membership or organization mindset. Whereas I'm adamant that this is a religion, and there's a sense of spiritual philosophy that goes along with the creed, and I'm adamant that we see it that way and we practice it that way. So for us, we're not into parades and rallies like Matt was, or things like that, or running people for office as some offshoots have done, or the NSM and whatnot. We strictly follow the religion as a religion.
So you would say they're more like ideology, like ideologues, I guess, than like religious.
They have the same books I have.
Yeah.
But there's clearly a difference in how they run it. And as I said, I was affiliated with both.
Yeah.
And they're definitely run more as a membership organization. They're run more like the National Alliance, or the NSM, or other organizations that used to be around, like White Revolution, the original National Alliance, as well as the new National Alliance. They basically run things that way.
Okay.
And I'm adamant that creativity, first off, it was founded as a religion. We practice it that way. I'm adamant that people that join the Church of Ben Clausen see it that way. And if you're looking for a membership group to join, or you're looking for lots of parades and rallies, then don't bother with us. We have none of that.
So do you have like actual church locations, or is it more of at like members' houses and stuff?
We don't have any physical structures. Our sister church in Russia, I believe they have a building. But mostly it's just it's mostly primary groups and small congregations, family units, a lot of family units and a lot of primary groups. And the primary group is just a small gathering of individuals. And some things are just, it's just a husband and wife and one or two or three or four children. And that will be their congregation. Sometimes they invite friends, of like mind to attend. But we focus, like the Mormons do, we focus a lot on the family unit, the individual, small, the primary groups, very small congregations. So that we can get the word out, and so that white people can prepare without being molested, without being seen as some type of political threat, or it also keeps the shirkers at bay, people that just want to join a membership group for whatever, so they can go to a rally and yell at people.
Yeah,
there's a lot of that out there, and we focus on practicing and following the religion, the 16 commandments, and that's what we're about. We're not about any of the basic white power movement type stuff. In fact, I've officially distanced the Church of Ben Clausen from the overall white power movement anyway. So we don't consider ourselves truly affiliated with the rest of the white racial loyalist movement, whether you want to call it the white power movement or whatever. We network with very few organizations, very, very few. And we pretty much stay out of the whole white power movement apparatus.
Okay. Well, now I've got some questions about particular beliefs that your church has.
Yeah, sure.
One of them is, so and you're pro-abortion, right?
That's another thing. Creativity is definitely different from your average. There's a lot of even white power people that are just anti-abortion automatic.
Yeah.
But for us, we're pro-abortion to an extent. Obviously, we don't want white people to have abortions.
Yeah.
We would prefer that white people didn't have abortions, but if it's within the first few months, especially if there was a rape involved or if there's some genetic defect, then yeah, it's the woman's choice to have an abortion, or I should say the couple's choice.
Okay, yeah, cool. Well, that's what, because I know that a lot of white groups are like, it's killing a white baby. And I was wondering if there was a, because majority of abortions are performed by minorities, if that was influencing the aspect of it at all, or is it mainly just,
Wait, say that again.
so a lot of white supremacy type groups, they are okay with abortions because, it's mostly killing minority babies, right? So I was wondering if that was influencing at all, or is it more of just you're
Well,
pro-choice like type of deal?
I grew up. I know some people always find it funny. I seem to always mention George Carlin. I grew up on George Carlin, and my parents were very libertarian.
Yeah.
They were basically kind of like liberal Mormons, not liberal in the modern sense, but just kind of liberal in everyday practice. And my parents encouraged me to think and to study and do research. So I grew up reading a lot of scientific novels or scientific books and journals and things like that. And of course, George Carlin had a big influence on me when I was growing up. I've always seen myself as a bit of a libertarian. And to me, when I was a kid, I looked at nature. Whenever I had a question I didn't know the answer to, I would look to nature. Is this allowed under nature? And in nature, you have, in fact, George Carlin actually has this in one of his comedy bits. But in nature, you do see abortion. You do see a natural kind of abortion occur in nature, and plus also believing in eugenics, breeding up. To me, abortion is just a form of eugenics. It's just a natural part of pregnancy. Obviously, not all bodies reject, a pregnancy. And not all pregnancies require an abortion for health reasons or whatnot. But I've always looked at it through the eyes of nature. Actually, all my questions, I kind of look through the eyes of nature. And in nature, abortion is something that does occur in a kind of passive eugenic sense. And so, as a form of evolution and whatnot. And so I've been pro-abortion because of that. And obviously, we creators, through salubrious living and eugenics, believe that abortion is necessary once in a while. We would just prefer white people don't get abortions. We're the minority population. It's kind of stupid, to get an abortion, especially when, it's not as difficult to live on a budget as a lot of people think. When you throw out materialism, then being poor and having a child isn't as much as a burden as people are led to believe. So that's pretty much our stance. Obviously, we don't want white people to have an abortion, but we're not opposed to it for medical reasons or even during the first couple of months.
Yeah. Okay. I'm also I saw there was a page
We're
on the
very different. I've had a lot of arguments with white power people that weren't creators on this. They accused me of promoting white genocide and
No,
things
yeah,
like
that's
this.
why I thought it contrasted with a lot of white nationalist views, so I thought it was interesting, you know.
Well, something else I want to throw out there early on is that I understand, there are phrases and euphemisms and definitions that get thrown around a lot, like white nationalists, white Christian nationalists, whatever the fuck that is. White supremacy. We don't use these terms to describe us.
No, you use white separationist, right? That's
Yeah.
what.
Well, we are creators, which is what we call ourselves. But we see ourselves as white racial loyalists, white separatists. I've actually even met one or two people that actually believed in slavery, and it's just ridiculous. I don't know where these people come from. They want to go back to like 1850, and it's just ridiculous. But yeah, there are a lot of people out there that do fit the stereotype of Hollywood, the so-called quote white supremacist, American History X, higher learning type thing. And then there are individuals that do think third position wise, but still find issue with some of our stances that I would consider to be white racial comrades, even though we do disagree.
So what would you say the, like, I assume for white supremacists, the final goal would either be all other races are exterminated or enslaved in some way. That seems to be the general white supremacists, not necessarily your group, right? Would you agree with that?
Well, you know, I have met excuse me, I'm trying to get something to drink. I have met very few people that actually believe in racial enslavement of blacks or whatever. I've met very few people like that. Most people, whether they believe in creativity or third position or something akin to either of those, most just want to be separated. It's the figment of Hollywood that you have a bunch of these kind of rednecky Ku Klux Klansmen types that are running around that want to, you know, or the stereotypical like Third Reich types that, you know, supposedly want to create a slave population or something like that. I've run into maybe one or two individuals like that. But the vast majority of people I've talked to in person and online just want racial separation.
So what is the final goal of racial separation? Would it be like everyone goes back to their homeland type deal, or?
Well, I've written about this before. Before I converted to creativity, I was a part of a multinational, multiracial third position movement. And I still have contacts to this day that aren't white in Latin America and Asia. And I don't, you know, the goal has always been separation. Basically, you know, Europe and North America for white people, I guess Australia as well. And then pretty much, you know, everybody else can divvy up the rest of the planet. That's usually what everyone seems to agree on. Basically, I know that I want to live in a country that's based upon creativity. I want to live in a creativity theocracy. That's what I want to live in. And, you know, if that's what it took, I'd be willing to move tomorrow. And I think most people most people, regardless of what race they are, I think at the end of the day would probably prefer to be in a country for their own particular group. And so that seems to be the general consensus is just, well, there'll be some countries that are for the whites and some countries for the others. And, you know, just let the chips kind of fall where they may. As I said, I've run into almost very, very few people that want to do a let's conquer and kill and enslave everybody. Very, very few people I've run into actually believe that. There are some out there. Don't get me wrong.
No, I get what you're saying. But,
I'm curious
about what about Native Americans and Native people that, because the United States and like North America was colonized. Do you argue giving them back the land and we go back to Europe, or?
Sometimes I get asked that question. So, the Americas don't really have an indigenous population. This was the last place on Earth to really be colonized by anybody. So this is one of those places that probably could be divided up. Obviously, when you look at Eurasia, you know, the Eastern Hemisphere, there's obviously, you know, Europe and North Asia are obviously historically white. Although technically, you know, North Africa was historically white, I'm sure most people would be like, yeah, that's fine. The Arabs can have Arabia and North Africa. The blacks can have the rest of Africa. I'm sure most people would agree with that. The Americas though, doesn't really have any real racial, there's no real racial identity for the Americas because this was the last place to be colonized by anybody. So there's really no indigenous person here. I would, though, make the claim, citing the works of Graham Hancock, that white people did live in the Americas before the Red Indians came over. The Red Indians are kind of only go back, I think, about 15,000 years or 18,000 years. But when we read Graham Hancock's findings and others, it's obvious white people were here first. But, you know, before them, there was nobody. So I think the Americas are one of those places that could probably just be divided up between everybody. Pretty much everybody gets their own say. You know, you could have white Latinos can have Chile, Uruguay, Argentina. Brown Latinos can have the upper part, maybe Central America for the Afro-Caribbean Latino type mixes, you know, and so on. You know, there's more than enough room on Earth to give everybody, you know, what they want.
Well, it's interesting you bring up the, like, Graham Hancock, is it, right?
Yeah.
So that was one of the things that actually was really interesting to me, because ancient white history, that's a whole page on your website.
Yeah. I've actually written a lot more than that's on there. I just haven't had the time for it. But you can still hear me as I'm clicking on things, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah, no, on there, yeah, there is in, I think it's in two different sections. But yeah, if you go to my personal writings on the website, I do have an essay article, whatever, that does talk about, you know, ancient white timeline. In fact, yeah, it's ancient white timeline. And in there, I basically try to map out scientifically, the basic history as far as we're sure, the ancient white, you know, the history of ancient white man. And so that's some of that is based upon the writings of Graham Hancock, others on Dr. Scotch, Anthony West, Robert Bivol to a lesser extent, and some other people, you know, Hamlet's Mill, Serpent in the Sky, books like that, that predate Graham Hancock. And that's where that comes from.
Okay. Well,
also I grew up reading a lot of books on evolution too. So I wanted to try to map it out as much as we can map it out. And so that's what that article's about.
Well, are you at all concerned that, like, you know, Graham's Hancock, he's not exactly the most respected in the archaeological community. A lot of people disagree.
Well, I mean, well, yeah, but I mean, most people disagree with him are established people, and established people obviously don't like it when somebody rocks the boat.
Well, but he's,
I mean, just because.
Sorry. Hmm? Go ahead.
Well, no, just because somebody's hated doesn't mean they're wrong. You know, just as like somebody who's praised doesn't mean they're right.
No, I agree.
I go on science and I go on logic and common sense. And, you know, I believe in Occam's razor. You know, if you have a logical explanation for things, that tends to be correct. And
well, he's used outdated models, like, or outdated information, because he was using, I know one of the things I looked up, it was something with Antarctica, like he was saying that people lived on the continent of Antarctica in the past, but he was using,
he was using
a study from the 40s when they didn't know that, oh yeah, the ice is this old, and then in the...
Well, I understand what you're saying. The thing is that the findings that he cites, and in later books, because it's not just Fingerprints of the Gods, I'm also citing Magicians of the Gods, America Before, the Message of the Sphinx. These are books, you know, like America Before just came out recently. And I think 5 years before that, we had the updated version of Magicians of the Gods. So we do have some using some archaeology, using geology. We do have some understanding of the weather patterns that existed so long ago. There is a lot of evidence that to suggest that the ice part of it, the ice age of Antarctica is not, you know, 100,000 years old or whatever they, you know, mainstream scientists claim it is. There's a lot of evidence to say, well, it just goes back a few thousand years. I guess it really just depends on what source you want to cite. What we do know for certain is that Zeptepi, all the evidence suggests that Zeptepi was a real event. The downfall was a real event. And so we understand that there is, when you go back 50,000 years, I'm not talking about the, you know, hundreds of thousands of years that some people cite. You know, if you read Forbidden Archaeology, Aryan man goes back like a million years or more. You know, it depends on, you know, what book you want to cite. And I think we're kind of getting into science fiction at that point. You know, I don't think white man was walking around here a billion years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, but some people have written that. And, you know, I think that Graham Hancock, as well as my own research, I think Dr. Scotch, Anthony West, I think these are probably the closest that we'll really get to understanding evolution and man's ancient history. You know, it's just the further back you go, the less we're going to know. And I think it's always going to be that way. So I guess it's really, you really just need to go with whatever evidence is the most, or whatever evidence you believe has been proven the most, and just run with that. I mean, everybody's going to believe their own thing. I've had debates with Christian identity people, whom I can't stand, who claim the earth is only 7,500 years old and that the white man only goes back 5,500 years, and there were giants and Nephilim or whatever walking around, and, you know, these weird alien-like people. And, you know, it really just depends, I guess. Just believe whatever you want and run with it, you know?
Okay. All right, so now I got some questions about your... Go ahead.
No, I was going to make a joke, but you were talking. Yeah.
Anyway. Oh, sorry. Okay. I have some questions about your own experience with the creativity movement, or just in general.
Yeah, sure. I want to apologize. There's a cricket out my window that's going crazy, so I don't know if you can hear that.
No, it's fine. I don't think I'm picking anything up, but.
Oh, okay, good. Okay.
Yeah.
This is driving me bonkers.
So I do know that you, when I was looking you up, I read that you were kicked out of the Matt Hales Church in 2003.
That's not true.
That's not true.
I don't know. No. Well, actually, the original lie, which is repeated, is that Matt Hale himself kicked me out in 2001 or 2002. But that's not true, because he ordained me in December of 2002. So I don't know where that comes from. There are a lot of people in the CA and TCM that don't like me. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because I treat creativity as a religion. I've had people that say that they used to be creators that attack me because they think I treat it too much as a religion, and instead of treating it as something political or as a social movement. And I'm not sure. I mean, it's a religion. It was founded as a religion. It's to be followed as a religion. But there are a lot of rumors that were spread by individuals, a handful of people in the TCM and CA, that for whatever reason don't like the fact that I really do treat it as a religion. And I'm not sure where they get off on that, but it is what it is.
Well, I read it was related to... Were you ever checked into a psychiatric hospital around that time?
Now what happened was, is in 2001, after putting up, this is after I went out one night by myself and put up nearly 10,000 flyers. This is in the span of one night. Mm-hmm. And I basically just peppered the entire East End. That's a section of Pittsburgh,
yep,
which is where I used to live. And I put up nearly 10,000 flyers and calling cards and stickers in the span of about 6 hours one night. I went out, I think it was 11. I think I started at 11 o'clock and finished up at like 5:30 a.m. And it got a lot of media attention. And some judge somewhere used that as pretense for that I could be violent. And had the cops pick me up, kidnap me, essentially put me in the loony bin. But then the doctor is like, you know, the guy is just a racist asshole. He's not insane. He's just a jerk. And that's the only time I've ever had to deal with that. But that happened in 2001.
Okay. All right. And then when we were emailing each other, one of the things you brought up was that you have experienced persecution and systematic racism all your life, right?
Yeah.
Would you like
Yeah.
to detail that, you know?
Where to start? So, obviously, I guess I was just born thinking different. I've always looked to nature. Obviously, being raised Mormon, didn't help, because a lot of people have prejudicial notions on Mormons as well. When I was raised Mormon, I always looked to nature. I always was a little bit different, And so there was basic, bullying and stuff like that, that I think a lot of children go through in life. The real hardcore political persecution, economic persecution, that stuff happened later on in life. And it seemed to mostly start up when after I converted to creativity. It was as if my conversion to creativity sparked some type of outrage in people. Which I never, outside of just hatred of white people or hatred of creativity, I don't really understand where it comes from. I mean, all I really do is write articles. I don't do these marches that lead into violent riots. I don't do parades and things like that. All I do is pass out some flyers, like once a month, and I write articles. But yeah, I put up a whole bunch of flyers one night, and a few days later they tossed me in the loony bin on the pretense that me engaging in free speech would somehow lead to violence. The doctor obviously was like, well, he's just a jerk, as I said before, he's not violent. There's been other instances of persecution. I've lost jobs over my religion. They look me up online. Of course, in the 21st century, that's going to happen pretty much to anybody who posts anything crazy online, whether it's pornography or politics, race, religion, what have you. Somebody's going to see it. Somebody's going to get offended. Somebody's going to get fired. But with somebody like me, it seems to be a little bit more so. But I've been fired from jobs just because I write essays and articles. I lived on the street at one point. I lived in a shelter at one point. I've done 12 years total in incarceration because of my religion, for practicing my religion. I've been nearly killed a few times. I've been attacked on the street. I was attacked in prison. Cops like to hassle me on occasion. It's just, it's the price you pay, though. When you believe in something strongly and you're willing to fight for it, and people see that, you're bound to get persecuted, whether you believe in creativity or Mormonism, whether you're a communist or a libertarian or a Catholic activist or what have you. Somebody somewhere is going to take issue with it, and you're going to have problems in life. But I think it's just part of, just fighting for something you believe in. It's going to happen. If you're like everybody else and you want to be just like one of the sheep and, just go to work, punch in, punch out, pay your taxes, get drunk on the weekend, and after, 60, 70, 80 years, you die. The system kind of leaves you alone. Special interest groups leave you alone. But when you actually stand up for a principle, whatever that principle is, you're going to face problems in life, hardships. And I don't regret it. I just wish people understood it more. It annoys me when I go through these things and people seem to think it's a lark, or I made it up, or. But I mean, the history is clear. It's there. I've never been ashamed of anything, and I've never kept any secrets from anybody, so.
Well, personally, when I read that, I was assuming that you felt this prejudice for being white, but it seems more from what you're saying, it seems more focused on because you're a creator, not necessarily specifically because
Well,
you're white, you know?
Before you could say it was, just the normal anti-white racism that we see today. There definitely were moments where I was picked on just because I was white. This is from blacks. And, that happened early on in life. But, I mean, you know, bullying just kind of happens. The reason I don't make a big thing out of that is because that's before I was really politically active. Growing up, you're going to deal with bullying and persecution no matter where you live. If you go to a school that's in a black neighborhood and you're white, or you're mestizo, you're going to get bullied. You're going to get picked on. You're going to face discrimination and persecution. If you're poor and you go to a rich school for some reason, you know, the same thing's going to happen. So I tend to kind of ignore, not really ignore, I just don't put too much emphasis on that part in my life, because that's probably just something that goes with everybody. Obviously, being white in America, it's kind of harder. The system is just rigged against you. But I'd rather people focus on, you know, what I believe in, rather than the fact that, you know, I just went through bullying when I was a kid just because of my skin color. I guess I could use that for propaganda, but I'd rather focus on the religion.
So would you say that applies to any in-group versus out-group? Like, you gave the example of a white kid in a black school. Would you say that applies to a black kid in a white school? Like,
well, no, not really in America. You know, if this was Russia, yeah, I would say that. But this is America, and it's obvious the system is anti-white. Okay. I just, for whatever reason, I just choose not really to focus on when I was a kid.
You focus more on your activism and how that's affected you.
Was I picked on by blacks because I was white? Yeah. That was obvious. And they were actually very open about that, that they were picking on me just because I was white. The fights I got into in prison, it was all race stuff. The fights I got into in school, it was all race stuff. So, yeah, obviously I've had to deal with persecution just for being white. But a lot of, maybe I should put it this way. When I bring that up, a lot of people dismiss it by simply just saying, well, you were a kid, so maybe it just had to deal with the normal, you know, going through puberty, being picked on type thing. And I don't believe that, but that's usually the argument people throw at me anytime I mention some of the hardships that I grew up with. And so that's probably more of the reason why I just kind of say, well, obviously I suffered when I was a kid, but it's nothing compared to today. And actually, that brings up something else, that it is more today, more pronounced. Like when I was a kid, I was picked on just because of my white skin. Today, it's like, you know, I'm white. It's my race, my ethnicity, my religion, my political stance, my philosophical stance. You know, it's like everything. Whereas when I was a kid, it was just black people just didn't like the white kid. But today, it's like, you know, the system and society just hates anything I'm about.
Well, as for your beliefs, do you ever, like, have you considered that because your beliefs are generally be cruel to other races, only fight for the, have you ever thought that influenced? Because a lot of people don't agree with that. Like, even
wait, otherwise. I'm not sure I heard everything. Can you repeat that?
So from your page, you're supposed to be enemies of other races and stuff. Like, I know you're a white separationist, but you're still supposed to, it seems like, make it harder for other people, for other races, you know?
I'm not really sure I'm following. I mean, we believe in racial separation. That's obvious. And, you know, when somebody attacks a white person, you know, then, you know, it's our duty, if we witness that, to stop it. Is that what you're at?
Violent means, right? That is, violent means are specifically allowed by your church.
Well, yeah. I mean, if somebody's beating up a white kid and I see it, I'm going to step in there. I'm going to put an end to it real quick.
Is preemptively allowed?
Say that again?
Is preemptive attacks allowed?
Well, I'm a huge believer in leaderless resistance. You know, I grew up back in the 80s and 90s, and that was all, you know, Robert Matthews, Louis Beam, Tom Metzger stuff. Turner Diaries, Hunter, Joseph Paul Franklin. That was all stuff back then. And when I first got active in the white power movement, although I consider the Church of Ben Clausen to be separate from that today, when I got into that, that's what it was. We're at war with the system. The system is trying to commit white genocide. Voting doesn't do anything. Therefore, we have no choice but to commit acts of terrorism. And I believe that's correct. I think that leaderless resistance, and I think the writings of Louis Beam and David Lane and Tom Metzger, Robert Matthews, I think that these are spot on as far as dealing with, an enemy that's as big as the system is.
Well,
I'm not opposed. I'm not opposed to violence at all.
no.
Unlike people in the CA or the TCM that like to put, a nice disclaimer on everything that like, oh, we believe in only being legal. which I don't know, to me seems like you're a bit of a pussy. I don't shy away from telling people, yeah, if your talents, if leaderless resistance is your talent, then go and do that. I have no problems telling somebody that.
Well, does that, well, what I'm trying to say is, so you've gotten fired from jobs because of your beliefs, right? That's a belief that most being violent, committing terrorist acts, most people would say, yeah, I don't want an employee that is advocating for that. Like even regardless of
Well,
what your
this is
vote
a
of what the goal is,
No, I understand what you're saying with that, but this is America. And if, when I'm at work, I'm completely professional. That I'm at work, I'm there to do a job, that's what I'm being paid for. I don't go to work, wearing a skinhead t-shirt and say, okay, let's get these n out of here. I don't do that. And if some, you know, I actually work very hard, whatever job I get hired for. And that's probably to prove to people around me that if I am getting fired, it's because solely because of my religion, my race, my beliefs. It's obviously has nothing to do with the way I treat a customer or, well, depending on the job, some jobs, you don't deal with customers like, when you work warehouse or in a factory. But, I don't mistreat customers. I'm always polite. If the job doesn't entail customers, I do my job correctly. I do it the right way. That way, when I do get fired, I damn well know it's because of my religion. I'm being
Okay, so
fired solely
you
because
think,
of something that I believe in.
okay, that, yeah. I'm glad you elaborated on that because that is interesting. Oh,
Yeah,
you.
I'm not, yeah, it's not like American History X or something, or higher learning where, where I'm some redheaded Jew who's, real skinny, walks in with a skinhead t-shirt and be like, it's the white man, man, it's the white man's world. I mean, I don't do that.
You think that like your job should be separate from your beliefs, so they you think that way, and you think that the businesses should agree with that way, right? Basically.
Well, this is America. This is America. This was a place founded so that people that were fleeing persecution, as long as they weren't bothering anybody, could live their life out. As I said, I'm very libertarian. I believe that as long as you're not harming somebody else, you have the right to believe or live as you want. And it's ridiculous. It's hypocritical for people that claim to be all white or white, who claim to be, like a so proud to be an American or to believe in American nationalism or to be a constitutionalist or even to be a liberal or a libertarian, and then they fire me just because they don't like my belief. Does that make sense?
No, that makes sense.
All right.
You also were in the emails, you were talking about political connections you have in Latin America, right?
Yes,
Are you
yes.
playing, is it
I've
like,
had.
yeah, go ahead, just
Oh no, I've some of these contacts I've had for 30 years now, 25, 30 years.
yeah, so like, are you planning an expansion there for your church or?
Wait. I did do a list of countries on the website that we do have members in.
Yeah, I let me me see if I can.
We do have members in South America. We have a lot of members and supporters in Brazil, Portugal, Spain, Argentina, Chile, and Uruguay. A lot. In fact, Brazil and Portugal, the amount of support we've gotten is rather as actually I'm a little dumbfounded at actually.
Do you have like a
It's
count of
it,
how many, you know, like, do you have any
well,
number estimates or?
I don't give numbers. I'm not Matt Hale. I'm not going to throw out a bunch of numbers. But it's, as I say on the website, it's a religion. It's very hard. I mean, nobody knows how many people actually believe in Islam or Buddhism. You know, it's a religion. You know, somebody might believe in it and just not be public about it. So it's hard to tell how many people follow a religion. I do know that people have contacted me in Eastern Europe and in South America, specifically converting to creativity because they've listened to my radio show, which is, you know, I upload it once a week. It's just I just record a, you know, a sermon, basically an hour and a half long sermon. I upload it to the website. And I get people from many countries around the world that say, well, you know, I was listening to you. Somebody bitched about you on Gab or MeWe or whatever, VK, and I wanted to know what you were about. And I listened to your show and I agree with it. And I decided to read, and I think that creativity is right for me. So I have gotten a lot of emails like that. And I've gotten those emails from places like Uruguay, Brazil, Portugal, Spain, Russia, Romania. But you want to know mostly about like non-white contacts that I got?
I'm interested in just like how expansive would you say your group is, you know? Like I know you've got members in all these countries, but like is it, you know, a family or is it like an actual community has built up that you can identify this is a creativity community that is connected to our church and not like the Creativity Alliance and stuff.
Well, are you talking about like a whole town
Not
of
necessarily a
members,
town, but
or?
just like, you know, like one guy is, yeah, it's part of the movement, but it's not nearly as influential as, oh yeah, we have a church group here, you know?
Well, as I said, you know, I focus on, we focus mostly on, excuse me, on family units and small primary groups.
So
I
that's
mean,
what,
so,
like a
well,
primary
so,
group is what I'm really asking. How, like, do you have primary groups in all these countries, or is it just
yeah,
you know that there are creators out there?
now, so the Church of Ben Clausen is set up. I set it up kind of similar to the way the Mormon Church is, the LDS Mormon Church,
I'm gonna
which
be
is what
honest,
I
I don't
was.
know much about that church, so
Oh,
if you want to
okay.
elaborate on
So,
that, go ahead. Like,
yeah. So, okay. So, I was raised Mormon, and I was actually my father's a high priest in the church. I was being raised to be a high priest, but I just, you know, it didn't speak to me. I believed in, you know, nature's laws, and later on, I discovered, you know, esoteric philosophies, Nazi mysticism, the writings of Julius Evola, René Guénon, Giovanni Gentili, Miguel Serrano. I started reading these real like heavy type books, and I got into that. That's how I started getting most of my contacts in Latin America and Asia and the Middle East, because I also have contacts in the Middle East as well. And that was through all the esoteric kind of Nazi mysticism stuff. When I converted to creativity, I kept my, well, much to the chagrin of some members, I kept my contacts with non-whites, and I've never thrown away these contacts just because obviously I put the white race first, which is what my religion tells me to do. So, but I still have these contacts. And as far as the church goes, the Church of Ben Clausen kind of got sidetracked a little bit there, but the Church of Ben Clausen is laid out a lot like the Mormon churches, where it's the focus is on the family unit, it's on the local congregation. So rather than having, you know, membership certificates and month, you know, like you know, yearly dues payments like Matt Hale would do or the TCM or the CA do, I said, no, this is a religion. You either convert and you practice it or you don't. And so we have the basic structure is individuals and family units, And then they come together and they form primary groups. And a primary group, it could be anywhere from 1 to 25 people. And then primary groups come together, whether it's a large primary group or several small ones, they come together and they form a congregation. For instance, we have a congregation in the tri-state of Western Pennsylvania because we have so many members there. We also have a congregation in Central Texas because we have so many members in Austin and San Antonio. And we also have members in Houston and Dallas as well, but those are their own congregations. And so we do have congregations here and there. Usually, though, I like things to be kept family-oriented, individual-oriented, live the 16 commandments, proselytize when you can, and basically just form your own primary group, grow that up to where it becomes a congregation, and eventually I will ordain one of the members, and then they run it as their own church. And my goal is to have 1,000 churches, just to have 1,000 individual Church of Ben Clausens around the world. And that's my goal. That's the goal of the Church of Ben Clausen, is to spread the religion and to have basically just have, a church in every city, where it's independent. It handles the needs of the congregants for that area, that region, that county, that state, that province, wherever it is. Because obviously what our members in Canada face is nothing like is totally different than what our members in the United States face, because Canada doesn't have freedom of speech. Canada is a dictatorship. It might be a soft dictatorship, but it's still a dictatorship. So our members up there have to run their primary groups and their congregations different than our people in Utah and Pennsylvania, Ohio, Texas, the Northwest, the way they run theirs. And of course, in Russia, it's a different scenario than if you're living in Germany, which is different than if you're living in Spain, which is different than, Argentina and so on. So it's basically each primary group, tries to grow to the point where it can become a full congregation and then, sets itself up as an independent church within the Church of Ben Clausen.
Okay.
Does that answer that question?
Yeah. So you emailed me. You didn't like that I said that the creativity movement was dying, right?
The creativity movement is a group.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, the creativity religion. I said that it was it wasn't really practiced as much anymore. And so
yeah. Well, that's not true. Obviously, our church over the last 20 years has grown considerably, especially over the last few years.
Well, I think it was Ben Hale. Ben Clausen. Sorry,
Ben Hale?
I mix up the names. But I think it was during his era. They had a 30,000 members, and that's that was considered the peak by FBI or some outside group. Would you say that you are close to that number? Great, you don't have to give me specifics.
What's the number?
30,000.
30,000 by 1993?
I don't know what year it was, but that's when that's what the FBI was like, this was the peak of it,
I can tell you right now that the number is probably between 100 to 300,000 actual adherents to the religion, people that actually practice the 16 commandments on a daily basis. Certainly there are millions of supporters of Ben Clausen's teachings that for one reason or another, they don't want to, reject nationalism for their particular country. We have a lot of supporters in Eastern Europe that believe in most of what Clausen wrote. This is a good example maybe of what you're asking, but we have a lot of supporters, not full members, just supporters of the Church of Ben Clausen in Eastern Europe that see nationalism and the Eastern Orthodox Church as being racial. So they're integral to being a white racial loyalist. And so while they agree with most of what Ben Clausen wrote, they reject the anti-nationalism, the anti-Christian stuff. And so they're not members, but they do support the religion. I've even had non-whites. Some were contacts I had for 20, 30 years. Others were new contacts that said that, obviously, they don't see themselves as being, that they recognize that the white race is superior in many respects, and they do admire the writings of Ben Clausen, but obviously they focus on their own race. I've had a lot of people in Japan tell me that. And that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. You know, you focus on your race, we'll focus on our race.
Okay. Yeah,
but
that's
there's no way. I have tried to calculate it by being conservative. I believe the number, as I said, is between 1 to 300,000 actual adherents. Supporters are in the millions, and that's both whites and political non-whites that also hate Jews, hate communism, don't believe in race mixing. You know, so there's a lot of people that have told me over the years, you know, as I said, they support the writings. They just can't give up nationalism, or they can't give up the Eastern Orthodox Church, or they're maybe they're white power Mormon. They don't want to leave Mormonism. I've had these conversations with people over the years, and there's a lot more supporters than adherents just because of that. It's a very hard religion to follow because we do reject a lot of traditional concepts that are seen as being white pride, white power, pro-white. We're anti-nationalism. We're anti-capitalism as far as runaway capitalism goes. You know, we believe in having a healthcare system. We believe in racial socialism. We reject Christianity completely. And these are things that are usually seen as, you know, we reject the right wing completely. These are things that are seen by people as being essential to being white power, white pride. And so the religion is very difficult for a lot of people to fully support, to convert to. But there are a lot of supporters, and way more supporters, like 20, 30 times as many supporters as actual adherents.
Okay.
Probably 50, 100 times as many.
So I got one last question.
If you want a number, I will say that the ADL and the FBI did tell two or three media outlets in Austin, they gave them a figure that they believed that our church had in the United States. I've publicly stated that.
You said it was like a few hundred, right?
Depending on whether you cite the ADL, the FBI, it's between 600 to 700 members in the U.S. alone.
And you're saying
that's what they
more.
Say. Yes, I'm going to say that there's more than that.
Okay. I got last question for you. This is your opinion. How did whites lose?
Lose what?
Like, America is not you say it's a white founded country. Now it's not. Now we've essentially lost, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, the Jews, the Jews control the system. That's obvious. Even people that aren't racially conscious recognize that. I'm not one of these people that believes in saving the United States. Our religion is definitely not about trying to save the United States.
But, because you say that whites are superior, right? That's your belief.
The white race is the master race, yes.
How did we lose then?
Oh, that's obvious. Unfortunately, white people are divided. That's the problem. I get asked this question a lot, you know, if you're so, you know, superior, why'd you lose? Well, you know, you can lose to somebody who's inferior if the numbers are so imbalanced. Plus, you know, white people are divided. What you have is a bunch of white people left the back door open. And so while everybody was watching the front door, everybody came in through the back door. It's a standard divide and conquer tactic. Sun Tzu wrote about it in The Art of War. The Jews wrote about it in the Talmud. I think Nietzsche wrote about it as well. You know, it's a standard tactic. And unfortunately, white people are divided. I mean, look at us. You know, creativity is the ultimate white creed. You know, not Christian identity. You know, not white nationalism, not white Christian nationalism, whatever that is. You know, creativity is, but it's a hard sell. And I think the problem is white people have just gotten so used to all the Uber technology we have, the fact that they could just run to Walmart and get something whenever anything breaks in their house, that they don't really care. That's the problem. All they care about is money and materialism. And, then there's the brainwashing element. Almost everything you see on TV and newspapers and from Hollywood, it's all from an anti-white slant. It's all propaganda. So it's kind of hard to compete against that when, all you got to do is just sit in front of your television set or run to Walmart. It's kind of hard to compete against that. I can't offer money or television shows, for white people. This is a hard life. Fighting back against the system is difficult, and most people just don't want to deal with that. They want everything to be easy. And with creativity, we're not we don't believe in living easy. We believe in struggle, and that's what it's about.
Okay. Well, I did enjoy chatting with you. I don't, I
Do
won't, I want to
you
be.
want me to bash Christian identity a little bit, or?
No, I do want to be clear. I still don't really believe, I don't agree with the tenets of your religion, but I do think it's interesting what you had to say, so.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I mean, people believe whatever they want. As I said, I'm very libertarian. Believe whatever you want to believe. Whatever works for you, that's what works. Obviously, I want people to believe in creativity.
Yeah, but thank you for talking to me.